Blog Talk Radio.
How very curious.
Being invited.
I'll say it's rude. It's very, very rude indeed.
Very, very, very rude indeed. Oh, I'm very sorry. But I did enjoy your singing, and I wondered if you could tell me...
You enjoyed our singing?
Oh, what a delightful time. And things happen, I'm so excited. We never get compliments. You must have a cup of tea.
Ah, yes, indeed, the tea. You must have a cup of tea.
That would be very nice. I'm sorry I interrupted your birthday party. Thank you.
Birthday? My dear child, this is not a birthday party.
Of course not. This is an unbirthday party.
Unbirthday? Well, I'm sorry, but I don't quite understand.
It's very simple. Now, 30 days have... an unbirthday, if you have a birthday, then you... She doesn't know what an unbirthday is.
How silly! Ah, Charlie Lucidate. Now, statistics prove that you've one birthday.
Imagine, just one birthday every year.
Ah, but there are 364 unbirthdays.
Precisely why we're gathered here to cheer.
Why, then today is my unbirthday, too.
It is?
What a small world this is.
In that case, a very merry unbirthday.
To me?
To you.
A very merry unbirthday.
For me?
For you.
Now blow the candle out, my dear, and make your wish come true.
A merry, merry unbirthday to you.
Twinkle, twinkle, little bat. How I wonder what you're at. Up above the world you fly, like a tea-tray in the sky.
Hello, is anybody out there? Neutron? Hello? Hello?
Can you hear me? Bobby, call back if you can. Hey, Bobby, 1 second. Bobby?
Yo.
Hey.
Hello.
Hang on 1 second.
Sure.
All right, how's that? Is that working?
Yes, are we experiencing technical difficulties?
Yeah, I decided to change things at the last moment and it didn't work, so I'm going to have to do some more investigation. Oh, man.
Well, you promised me a surprise and I was surprised.
Yeah, so I'll miss the ad lib, but I just have to say, firstly, congratulations on... a one-year anniversary or a happy unbirthday.
Yeah, I recognized it instantly.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. Yeah, I had the vinyl as a kid. Excellent. Oh, man, what a trial by fire that was. I have to get the heart to calm down, I think, after that one.
You back up 20 yards and
punch. All right. Now, Pam was threatening to join us at some point, but for the moment, it's us two. I will get the first poem up. Do you just want to give a bit of a description about what our contest was about, actually?
Oh, the if it's green, it's good?
Yes, that's the one. Yeah.
You went for the cream. You went for the right off the top with gold, silver, and bronze winners for your anniversary. So I wanted to give the also rans a chance to pony up, and so my rules were that your entry had to have at least two honorable mentions and nothing else. it just stresses me for writers the number of people who can't read out there. I booted more than a few off of there, and most were pretty gracious about it. One was very rude in his response, so I told him he was delightful, a muzzle top, and then I put him on ignore. So but other than that, everyone said, "Oh yeah, you know, hey, you don't screw with this blonde." Everybody else. A couple people I said, hey, you know, go back to your library, find something that, and most everyone played by the rules, and I was very encouraged that so many people actually knew how to read. It's encouraging. So I figured, what the heck, let's give the honorable mentions out there, because I know I have pieces that I poured my heart and soul into, and all I ever get were honorable mentions. I'm like, come on, they're better than that. So I know everyone has at least one little favorite that can't seem to score the top of the top of the mark, and I want to give them a chance to pitch it to me. And I wish I could give everybody a gold or a silver, but unfortunately, this week is going to get yet another honorable mention. But that was, we used to have a motto when I was in the Corps that if it was green, it was good. All of us, of course, wearing green, and so that's one. And with the honorable mention getting the green, I figured why not? So I figured if it's green, it's good, and that's why I called the contest that. If it's green, it's good. So everybody that's out there, and I figured 30 days has September, April, June, and November. So that's why I took 30 entries and gave them 2 weeks. And actually got my last entry yesterday. I was very surprised. So I've got 30 of those bad bears to read through in the next few days and pick. But there's some very good ones out there. Short,
there are,
long, and all different. And I love it. This is a fruit salad. We've got all different kinds of topics out there. So.
It is indeed. And when we get to the end of the episode, I might, if we've got time, I might see if my microphone actually works or whether I've got to go back to the drawing board. my God.
I've been for our next contest for the social media. You're going to be surprised at what I found some really interesting stuff out there. And so I've been putting that together. Our Christmas contest is going to be the Santa spinoff. I'm calling it that because in researching last year's Christmas contest, I was not surprised, but I was enlightened by the fact that all different cultures seem to have their version of Santa Claus. And I thought, how fun would it be to introduce all of these different versions of Santa Claus or Sinterklaas or Kris Kringle or have people write to that. So I thought because they seem to enjoy last year's with all the different cultures. So that's what I thought I'd do this year. So that's what that's going to be about. And I found yet another surreal artist. So that's going to come up pretty soon too. So. I'm working away.
Fantastic. I send you an idea, so, you go with it, and it works well, I think. It's taken us a year, but I think we're hitting our strides. And
I think so.
Oh, man. Well, I'm going to get you to read the first poem, Birthday Girl.
Good. Yes. Where do I put the candle? Never mind. enlightenment. I know. Thank goodness it's an over after midnight show. I can be so naughty, so inappropriate. Lotus Tassel wrote us, sent us an enlightenment, and sunbeams splintering beige shackles stretch their arms toward bosky shade. Brushing underbrush with luminosity, refurbish deprived breaths in a wink. Caressing surreptitious blossoms, open the bottles of wild perfumes, waking the hibernating sprouts quietly. Blanket russet floor with Kelly moss. The striking hues of butterfly wings, airbrush the canvas with lush panache. Invoking chirps of perching birds, compose sweetened songs of the woods. You never know when such rays, the rays of bliss, graze your veiled, reviving spirit from light years away, immerse you in pristine aesthetics. End poem.
Excellent read there, Captain. And thank you, Lotus Tassel, for that excellent poem. That first stanza was a breath of fresh air. I think I'll just read it again. Sunbeams splintering beige shackles stretch their arms towards bosky shade, brushing underbrush with luminosity, refurbished deprived breaths in a wink. So it almost starts off with quite a claustrophobic feel to it. And then that last line in that stanza refurbishes deprived breaths in a wink. And then the poem soars on the wings of butterflies from there on in. I thought the vocabulary was very refreshing and had a romanticized feel to it. And in the last line, immerse you in pristine aesthetics. And I think it's interesting that she should refer to aesthetics as aesthetically. Lotus has created a marvelous word picture.
What were your thoughts, Captain?
Oh, I agree. It has it is very refreshing. It's a very good word for that, actually. It starts with the sunbeams caressing surreptitious blossoms, opens the bottles of wild perfumes, waking the hibernating sprouts quietly. I like that. If you're a gardener, that's what happens. You turn around and all of a sudden things have popped open. And the striking hues of butterfly wings airbrush, and I like that. The butterfly wings airbrush the canvas with lush panache. She does have a way with words, and the word picture is lovely. So I really enjoyed this one, and I appreciate her submitting this.
Excellent comment, Captain. And let's move on to the next one. I'll give this one a read. So this is by Soliloquy. It's called Teasing Avalon 81. It's a shame how I rip up innocent flowers by their dainty roots, plucking the petals of fated flora, only to appease my faint-hearted insecurities. She loves me, she loves me not. Yet how is a flower to know the wiles of a woman's repute or the time it takes to build up the courage to articulate said intentions? I have killed many a poinsettia in my quest for love and buried them shallow in my garden of voiceless disappointments. End poem. What do you think, Captain?
I like this. It has a little tinge of humor to it. I like this. I have killed many a poinsettia in my quest for love. And I don't think there's anyone among us who hasn't sat and pulled the petals off a poor unsuspecting blossom going, he loves me, he loves me not. You know, she loves me, she loves me not. The visual imagery is the first stanza, I think, sets the stage. It's a shame how I rip up innocent flowers by their dainty roots, plucking the petals of fated flora. I thought this was delightful. It's a very whimsical and a very, very subtle sense of humor. I really enjoyed this one.
Great comment, Captain. And you know what? It was interesting that they used the poinsettia in particular, because I'm fairly sure that's got a shit ton of petals on it as well, and then buried them shallow in my garden of voiceless disappointment. And I don't think I could have put it better myself. A deeply moving tale of love that does not reach potentially dizzying heights, at least that which exists beyond the mind. And it had me thinking of unrequited love. But possibly until words and actions are in motion, one often won't know. And it was just such a understated, simple, but breathtaking concept for the poem.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
Yeah, I was really impressed with this one. I have to say, after doing my pre-reading, that there's not a bad poem amongst them tonight. So.
No.
We're in for a bit of a treat.
I think so.
And that's why I wanted
the honorable mentions, because, like I said, I know everyone's got their pet poem that, you know, it's like the Westminster Dog Show. You know, you take your scruffy little mutt to the Westminster, and you think that they're the best in breed, and someone shoots you down. So I'm letting everyone trot on their scruffy little...
Well, you know what? The thing is, though, that realistically, when you think about it, you have an average of, say, 15 to 20 people for any contest. And there's just not enough to go around. It's not to say that, like, it's a very subjective thing, judging, but it's not to say that it's a bad poem at all. So I'm exceedingly happy with the quality of the poems tonight.
Me too. I was I was very pleased, and I like the cross section that we got. Different subjects, different styles, which, like I said, it's a wonderful assortment. And I know I'm going to have my hands full judging this. But it is subjective.
I don't envy you, that's for sure.
Well, it's a, you know, I picked the wrong time to pick to give up a vodka. I really did.
Oh man, I was just so lucky that you called back earlier tonight. I was pooping my pants there for a few seconds. I was like, oh, don't tell me I've destroyed the anniversary episode in the first 5 minutes. That was hilarious.
Hey, you know, things like that make for great stories afterwards.
They do indeed. They do indeed. Yeah. All right, so I'll jump on to the next one, and I will get you to read this one, if you will.
Sure. Okay, The Bard's Last Stand, and it's a villanelle. Weighed down upon joy. I go. Wonder, one day we're going to have a contest to have people tell us where they got their nom de plumes, noms de plume, their pen names. There's some really interesting ones out there, like yours. the Bard's Last, and it is, surrounded by these cheerless, stony heights, the bard must face the wrath of judgment's rule. He watched as fellow peers succumbed to slights. There'll be no path to save him from such plights. And after all, it's nothing short of cruel, surrounded by these cheerless, stony heights. His works of art were shared with fair insights, and yet the law would label him a fool. He watched as fellow peers succumbed to slights. It seemed that balladeers had lost all rights and forced beyond a simple ridicule, surrounded by these cheerless, stony heights. His days now left were spent in sleepless nights. He had no choice to challenge this misrule. He watched as fellow peers succumb to slights. When I retrace the horror of such sights, it serves a purpose like poetic fuel, surrounded by these cheerless, stony heights. He watched as fellow peers succumbed to slights. End of colon.
Excellent, Captain. And I was just going to, in this instance, it would help to read the author note if you wanted to give that a read as well.
Sure. Okay. The prompt for the contest was The Bard by Thomas Jones. It was painted in 1774, so apparently this is an art prompt. The style of the painting was romantic, not to be confused with the type of romantics put out by such publishers as Harlequin. Okay. The form I'm looking at is for the villanelle. Actually, the painting carries a horror story based on Thomas Gray's poem, The Bard. It recounts the tale of Edward I's legendary massacre of the Welsh bards. Bards were highly regarded in Welsh society at the time, and were thought to be descendants of the Celtic Druids. Jones regarded it as one of the best ever painted. How about that? I'm going to have to look that one up.
And you know what? We actually have a caller. I'll just bring them online now. Won't be a moment.
Hot damn.
Area code 360. Who am I speaking with? Is that Babbler?
It's Babbler.
Hot damn, Babbler!
Hey.
Thank you.
How's it going?
How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm doing okay.
That's good.
That woman of mine.
Did you
ever
talk?
Everybody talking. Nobody talking.
Thank you for joining us, Dabbler.
So, congrats, Captain, on 1 year.
Thank you. It's been a turbulent relationship. She keeps taking hiatuses.
Now, did you get a chance to hear the poem, Babla?
I did not. I'm just joining in.
That's all right.
I have to read the next one. Punishment. It's my party.
I think with this right, you can feel the persecution in the poem acutely. And after listening to the author note that Captain read, it was quite illuminating, and I was glad to see I was on the right track after reading the poem. And my good old mate Richard Weissman always mentions that historical rites that conjure a personal element, eliciting an emotional response, are great. And the subtle repetition builds the poem, and I think I too would use this as poetic fuel, especially the persecution of writers, because they're the observers in society. So there was quite an interesting take on the art prompt as well. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I enjoyed it thoroughly. I'm always impressed when someone can take a very strict structure and construct something within it, like a Shakespearean sonnet, like the Villanelle, like some of the other pieces I've seen that I've tried my hand at. And it requires a fair amount of discipline in your thinking. So I really enjoyed what he did with the prompt, and I was very impressed with the structure.
Excellent comment, Captain. And Babbler, you can either add your 5 cents or $5, and or just move directly to reading the poem.
I guess I'll just jump into reading because I didn't hear the last one. So my 5 cents would be, I don't know, made up, and that doesn't feel right.
No, that's fair enough.
This
that's what I thought I'd give you the opportunity. So if you want to read Bluebirds and Robins.
Yeah. So this is Bluebirds and Robins by Rory Deuce. Bukowski had his bluebird tucked neatly inside his breast, hidden from life's rigors, protected even from whores and hustlers that provide reprieve to a soulless man. A tenderness yearning to be exposed. But Buke was too fucking tough. No, don't weep. Don't bend steeled emotions over the anvil of life or love. That's what Buke might say. I have my own frail bird, a robin, though I let her sing. The sun when the blush of dawn paints a drab world in pastel colors, but also to the blackness that arrives unannounced and unwelcomed. Sing, dear robin, sing. Her veiled voice rings through the melancholy mists of morning. Or is that morning? While I compose and expose paltry poetry to no one and everyone. End poem.
Read.
Excellent, Rick Babbler. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I enjoyed this. This is very, very subtle metaphors. I like this hidden from life's rigors, protected even from whores and hustlers that provide reprieve to a soulless man. I have my own frail bird, a robin, though I let her sing to the sun when the blush of dawn paints a drab world in pastel colors. This is a really lovely piece. Very philosophical in its approach. Sing, dear robin, sing. Her veiled voice rings through the melancholy mists of morning. Yes, I really enjoy this. Very, I like the subject matter. I like what he did with it. And it's inspired by Charles Bukowski's Bluebird poem.
Thank you, Captain. And Babbler, what were your thoughts?
I also really enjoyed this. You know, Bukowski's Bluebird poem is clearly the inspiration, where the Bluebird is basically his soul or his heart, that's caged. Although I like the concept here of Bukowski's cage being protective, you know, protective shell, not just a segregating, like, cage, but as a method of protection as well. I love the strength and the melancholy. You know, it's a frail bird, but the bird still lives. And I love that the bird still sings, even the blackness that arrives unannounced and unwelcomed. The stanza, her veiled voice rings through the melancholy mists of morning. Whereas that morning, while I compose and expose paltry poetry to no one and everyone. You know, even in the dark moments and even in the sadness, the narrator is still able to express themselves and sing, you know, to communicate feelings even in the best and the worst of emotions. So I really liked it. There's something very serene and empowering about it, very uplifting, and you can almost hear the bird, which I really enjoyed. I thought this was an excellent piece. It was beautifully written.
Thank you, Babla. And we actually have another caller that's just called up, so I'll just bring them online now. Area code 807, who am I speaking with?
Hello, Neutron. Hello, Cap. It's Rob. Wanted to congratulate you on your anniversary.
Two. Holy crow. We got four people now. Break out the cards.
We had no people there for a bit. Oh, God.
We're familiar with that.
Even the host was missing. And, Robbie, did you get it? Listen to the poem. Do you want to make a comment?
I've half heard them as I've been getting ready to call in and all that. So I didn't hear them well enough to be able to comment, but I'm going to be on for a little bit so I can comment on the poems coming up.
Yeah, sure. Look, I'm going to give last word on this comment. So I just have to say that as a whole, the contest unveiled some new writers that I have not personally been exposed to. And it was a delight to read this poem. And it started off with quite a gritty tone and then took a turn in the second half of the poem in that there seems to be a tenderness and an insightfulness with the take on the robin and letting it sing its melancholic song. And I really liked what Babla said about the robin being the metaphor for the heart. And it's a joyous song in that it appreciates the moment with enduring mindfulness. And I think my favorite part was I have my own frail bird, a robin, though I let her sing to the sun when the blush of dawn paints a drab world in pastel colors, but also to the blackness that arrives unannounced and unwelcomed. Very well done. And with that, I will jump onto the next poem. And I believe if I've got my order right, we have a SoundCloud for Bard Dilibas. And I will just play that now.
Pity the words. Blindness curved our ears, words of reason that reflect a pitiful task. Bask in a ray of sunlight bent, tuned to depths which make our moment last. Malt for pepper, pith for rhyme, salt from time in a clearing not yet cured. In clouded woods, we imagine sleepless calls swept on a nameless cause. Let empathy sing of wonder, orbs of rain that succor your senses. Lend us your eyes to bind the song, melt stones in the musical fountain. But pity the words left unseen and unheard, unsaid, the words you forgot.
Excellent, SoundCloud by Dillybuck. And Robbie, would you like to go first this time with the commenting?
Well, sure. Straight away, the presentation caught me because I'm actually, like, I put myself as Robbie's multimedia poetry. It's just that all poetry doesn't allow me all the letters. But I'm someone who, like, I do it myself, but I very much appreciate it when other people have a unique presentation of their words like that. And I don't know if it was intended or not, but it kind of reminded me of almost the feeling like another dimension, you know. I've been really focusing on other dimensions and that sort of thing, and maybe that influenced my perception of this. But the way he talked about the experience of words and everything, it really made you focus on the experience of it and perhaps how existential it can be. And this is one of those ones where I would like to read it as well after listening to it. The sound effects in that were really cool. I just would have turned it down just a tad, just because it was almost overpowering at some points. And with the pacing added a nice element, like a certain feel, but just at times I felt like it with me waiting for the words, I kind of lost the thought of the word the thought of the sentence just a bit. But that's just, like, I don't know if that's nitpicking or whatever, but just that's just the perceptions I got. But like, overall, I really did enjoy the piece, and I enjoyed the kind of the essential and cerebral sort of mindset that it gets you in to think about the ideas that he's presenting in the poem.
Excellent comment, Robbie. And we have another caller. I believe it might be Pam. Is it area code 715?
Yes, it is Pam.
Hi, Pam.
Hi, Bobby. Hi, Robbie. Oh. Happy
hey there,
one
hey,
year
Pam.
Anniversary of being a co-host.
I was just thinking of the Seinfeld where what's it? Kramer goes, Pam, Pam. Anyway, just a random aside story. It just popped into my head.
Oh, gosh. Hey, Captain, are you still there?
I am.
Okay. No, I just thought,
wonderful.
Pam, wish you a happy anniversary.
Yes, I heard.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Just checking.
We all start talking at once. And step on one
oh,
another.
My goodness. I know. Isn't it crazy?
Well, it's kind of
yeah.
hard to, you know, body English or body language is absent here.
Well, yeah, body language, eye contact. I mean, I have so much trouble communicating with people online because you can't pick up all the time on, you know, like inflection when you're just reading.
Yeah, nuance.
But I'm usually
yeah,
a yakker, so I have to restrain myself.
Well, Pam, did you have a chance to listen to the poem or read the poem? Did you want to make a comment?
Unfortunately, I missed this one. So, I mean, I always enjoy Gardevoir's poetry, but this one I missed.
That's all right. Barbara, what were your thoughts?
I really enjoyed it. Like, the sounds in the background were interesting. They were, like, almost meditative, you know, like dripping in a cave. And this might be a weird reference. Maybe no one will get, but it kind of reminds me of the Legend of Zelda game for the Switch, the little tree guys. I can't think of what they're called right now, but they make an interesting noise when you find them, and it just reminds me of that. But I liked it. I felt like it added to the SoundCloud. And I enjoyed all of the figurative language throughout here, you know, it's like using figurative language to describe nature almost indirectly, you know, to describe language through nature indirectly, I thought was really interesting. You know, lend us your eyes to bind the song, melt stones in the musical fountain. It's interesting because it's like I can picture the melting stones in a musical fountain because I picture like a fountain, you know, like a running over rocks and how that kind of looks like the stones are melted. And then to take that and conceptualize it into musical as like sound and yet seeing it, you know, like there's three different senses and yet it all kind of works together visually. So I really enjoyed that, just kind of the figurative language throughout that kind of tie sensory and thought together with nature. And then, of course, that last stanza, pity the words left unseen and unheard, unsaid, the words you forgot. You know, there's so many things you can picture and imagine and express, and yet there are also so many that you can't. You know, the things that you see but you don't know how to describe, or words that just kind of fail you and don't make it out. Or those wispy ones that are only there for a flash. You know, and I think like any poet can really relate, or any writer really, to those kind of ephemeral words. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was wonderfully contemplative, you know, list like chain of haikus. You know, the only oddball there being but, kind of hanging out before that last haiku. So I thought this was beautiful and very contemplative and interesting creative use of language.
Great comment, Babla. And Captain, what are your thoughts?
I agree with Rob. The sound effects, while they were interesting, were a bit distracting. If he'd have cranked it down a couple of dB, it'd have been a lot better. I think they were good, or they were a good idea, but like I said, they tended to intrude on the poem as opposed to complement it. And especially since you've got such a beautiful haiku chain here, I've done haiku chains. They're not easy to maintain your the rhythm of your thought and to express what you want to say in such, and here again, it's another example. We've had some really interesting examples this evening of different forms, of different structures of poetry, and here's yet another one, a haiku, very rigorous, very demanding in its requirement to be precise. It requires precision, and like Babbler said, it's except for the butt hanging out there. that sounds terrible. I don't believe I just said that. Anyway,
I can.
Okay, never mind. You sit back down. But this is really a very philosophical, almost a transcendent piece, with a lot of very contemplative contemplative thoughts and verses in it. So I enjoyed it. And I think the presentation, if he works on it a little bit, he's got a great speaking voice. He really does. Just don't let your sound effects overpower your verse.
Great comment, Captain. Look, the only thing I can add to that is in the author note, there was a question, are words enough or should we pity the poet? And I suppose in my opinion, my humble opinion, words can be enough, but words in action are better. And I cling to words at times as a last bastion of hope, as I'm sure other poets do. But it's for pity, that's in the eye of the beholder. And yeah, I was really, really impressed with the poem. Pam, I'm just going to ask if you want to make a comment, and can you read the next poem?
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful haiku chain, and the you know, he wonderful use of imagery, and I really appreciated and enjoyed listening to everyone's comments. So very well done. And then I'll go ahead and read the next poem. And this is False Love by Rosie 16, and it goes like this. I knew it was too good to be true the first time you said I love you. I gave you my everything, yet you gave me nothing, filling my heart with hopes and dreams, but things were never as they seem. How could you say we are till the end, then cheat with my best friend? The promise of I do left me broken in two. How could I heal, for my feelings were real? As I sit here and cry, going over every lie, how could I have been so blind? Your false love wasn't hard to find. End poem.
Excellent read there, Pam. And Captain, would you like to start out the comments today for this poem?
Sure. The rhyming is very tight. It's nicely done. It tells a very familiar story, but you can feel the personal involvement in this. I mean, you can sympathize. You can feel her heartbreak with her disappointment in investing her emotions in someone who did not return them. I gave you my everything, yet you gave me nothing. And I think we all have found ourselves in that situation where we're looking at ourselves in the mirror and going, "How stupid was I?" Usually there's no answer, but this is a very nice, compact, economical write, and very emotive.
Great comment, Captain. And Robbie, what were your thoughts?
Well, I've been thinking a lot lately about how love is just can be so. I don't want to use the conventional words like twisty turny or, you know, whatever, but it's just, I think it's very, very well captures how love's adventure can just gets flipped on its head so thoroughly. And, you know, just the utter disappointment that it can bring. And, you know, more and more as you get older, you realize how love, like, you know, like it says in this poem, it really is like an all or nothing game, you know, and it really is devastating when you put your all into it and it doesn't work out. And even if it, no matter how wise or how right it seemed at the time, it really doesn't take away from the sting of when you realize that it was a mistake. Or especially like if things were good in the beginning, but now they've changed, and you know, you couldn't have possibly foreseen that, but they change. And of course, that's the risk, part of the risk that you take is that you never know what kind of things can change to completely change the dynamic of things. And yeah, so it captured all of that sort of feeling of that wild wild ride and unexpected nature that love can have.
Great comment. I enjoy this poem, and I think on a personal level, just following on from what Robbie said, sometimes the heart wants what the heart wants, and sometimes the heart sees what it would like to see, and sometimes people are just disingenuous, and they promise the world delivering it by hand in a handbasket, rather, and I think this was accessible both emotionally and with regard to the language, and I think being a more of a cathartic program, it was right in our alleyway or our swim lane, so very well done. And Babla, what were your thoughts?
Well, I've really liked what everyone else has had to say, and I guess, you know, what I have to add is that there seems to be a kind of youthfulness to this poem to me, that kind of, you know, like a pureness and innocence to it, and then it kind of turns to a little bit of tarnish, you know, almost like a lesson learned kind of, where it opens with, "I knew it was too good to be true," you know, so it's like, well, I should have known better, you know, the little voice in the back of my head that I chose to ignore, you know, said this is too good. And then to end, you know, "As I sit here and cry, going over every lie, how could I have been so blind? Your false love wasn't hard to find." You know, realizing that sometimes when things seem too good to be true, it's because they are. And the regret over committing so easily, you know, false love wasn't hard to find. And so there seems to be this implied expectation that love next time should be more difficult to attain, which to me, you know, is a little bit of jading, you know. There's grief, obviously, and the pain associated with being cheated on and lied to and committing to someone who is not returning the favor. But this poem almost to me has a little bit of a deeper level to it of becoming a little jaded from something innocent and wholehearted to now something a little cracked and protected. So I thought it was a great piece.
Great comment, Babla. And Pam, would you like to round out the comments for this poem?
Absolutely. Yeah, I liked what everybody had to say. And, you know, to me, I have to agree, there is a kind of a thought of becoming jaded. I like how the first line, "I knew it was too good to be true," really speaks to, you know, trying to learn to trust our instincts when it comes to people. And the end line, "Your false love wasn't hard to find," makes me think of the saying that a leopard never changes its spots. As far as on a technical level, for the rhyme and flow, I found the third stanza to be the most appealing, and I really like how this was such a beautiful and emotive write. So very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. And Robbie, would you like to read the next poem by Metaphysical Migraine?
Okay. I just had it, and let me just reopen it here. Okay. A prehistoric passion. In a cave lit by animal fat torches, old ochre from an oak of a bloke, stokes the fire of a slave to Saturn. Whispered waves of a brush with gentle giants. An alliance leaves an underground record of hoofbeats. A strong pulse in battle of cattle. Beasts' breasts in a stampede and scurry, with a flurry of horses' manes. A rocky canvas corrals four-legged leaps from feral to a Renaissance rendezvous.
Excellent read, Robbie. And Pam, would you like to start the comment?
Yes, absolutely. I thought this was a wonderful brevity that paid tribute to an ancient form of art, and not just an ancient form of art, but an ancient form of communication. I like how he mentions the okra and the animal fat torches, bringing us back to what people had accessible in that time. I also like how in the third stanza he creates the movement of the animals, and that very much to me brings the artwork to life. So just excellent brevity and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
I agree with Pam. It's an excellent brevity. It is very well written. It's evocative in that it's talking about ancient history before the formation, for the creation of language. This was their record keeping. This was their historical documentation. And I don't think it's interesting to me that I don't think they had any notion of what they were doing at the time, other than they were just expressing themselves about their world around them. There was no language. This is what they did. But with this piece, I like the internal rhyming. Very, very clever. This has got an interesting rhythm to it. Ochre from an oak of a bloke, and then we've got looking at it, gentle giants, alliance of leaves. You can hear there's a lot of assonance in this, and it's very nicely done because it gives it a really interesting rhythm that it feels good when you're reading it.
Thank you, Captain. And Babla, what were your thoughts?
Well, I agree a lot with what to say here. I gotta say, like, that internal rhyme scheme and alliteration, it almost reminds me of hoofbeats because it's offset. You know,
yes.
Beast breasts in a stampede scurry with a flurry, like it's dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Like, it almost reminds me of hoofbeats, which I thought was very appropriate for the art. It's a pretty short piece, and yet I think that the use of the rhythm and the language, you can kind of picture the cave painting happening, and the way it's drawn, and then it talk about bringing it forward in history. You know, a rocky canvas corrals four-legged leaps from feral to a Renaissance rendezvous. You know, like it goes all the way from, you know, ancient history, like, I think the oldest cave paintings are like 17,000 years old, 27, something like that, you know, up until more modern art, even though at this point Renaissance is not modern. You know, you're talking about 500-600 years ago at this point, which is, you know, substantially longer than your average human lifespan. So, you know, it's like ancient history to less ancient history, depending on your perspective. And just as a little tidbit, it kind of reminds me of a recent discovery that was done with, like, cave paintings. You know how you have kind of the wobbly lookingness to them, where, like, there's one animal with, like, two heads and too many legs and stuff like that? They recently discovered that if you take a torch into the cave, the flickering from the fire actually makes them into movies because of the way the fire moves in the cave. So they're actually designed to be seen by firelight. Anyway, just a tidbit.
I love that.
I'm so Googling that. I'm so looking that up.
That's excellent. And Robbie, would you like to round out the comments?
Well, sure. It puts me in the mind a little bit of the one Gina Petroglyphs. They had painted their gods of water, I think, rainfall, and the belief is that they really seem to truly believe that those paintings were the gods, that like, quite literally. And, you know, that's why it wasn't cool at all to erase them or get rid of them. And it just put me in that mindset because his the way it works, it really put the emotional investment in the painting. Like, I really felt like the kind of like the poem was the painting. You know, it really was a very natural extension of it. And I'm insatiably curious as someone who loves imagery and allegory and that, stokes the fire of a slave to Saturn. I want to know what that's, I so want to know what that's about, because I'm sure that there's a story there. I know Saturn was the god of time, I believe. But I'm wondering what that single line there is referring to. And I'm sure that it's not it just, simply a descriptive line. I'm thinking that there is some sort of mythological story or background to there. And it just had a very primal feel to me that, went perfectly with the painting that's being described in the poem. It really did feel like that primal, ancient feeling that is being conveyed through the cave painting.
Excellent comment there, Robbie. And I do agree with you there. I think there is something to that line about Saturn. Babbler's posted a link if anyone's interested later for the curious. I would say it's to do with metaphysical's poem there. Ah, it's about the flickering cave art. There you go. So that's on the board now. And
excellent.
Next we've got a poem by John Nakapalau. I'll just post that. Captain, it's been a while since you've read. Would you like to read again?
Great. Okay. This is The Sea Becoming Mussel Soup. All righty. So you get another brevity here. The sea becoming mussel soup. And now I know what dish we are preparing for the last supper for man and first supper for beast, seven heads with gaping mouths, wounded head licking lips, so grateful for so many cooks who spoiled this simple recipe of existence. Hundreds of millions, shells agape as if they had been boiled. State of wonder, so very far from holy shore. End poem. And his author's note is, hundreds of millions of mussels dead in the Pacific Northwest, shells agape as if they had been boiled. I remember reading about that.
Thanks, Captain. That was a great read, and thank you, Don, for the poem. I think the damage we do as humans in general to the environment is horrible, but in this instance, not only have we caused an environmental disaster to unfold, but that would have materially affected food production through, I'm assuming it's the warming oceans. It could have been runoff from farmland or sedimentation and erosion. The list goes on, but it was quite an enlightened right. Captain, do you have some more details about that from the article you were reading? Was it warming oceans or...
Now, I don't recall. I do remember reading about the event. And I just, together with so many of the other changes in the environment and the damage to wildlife, I find it horrifying. I mean, between this and all of the wildfires you've had down in Australia, I think a few months ago we were talking about the loss of tremendous numbers of wildlife down there because of the fires. I find it very tragic.
It is indeed. And it was so bad that the koalas in particular copped it big time when those bushfires were on, because their little hands and feet were burning because they were trying to get out of the trees in time. So no one likes to see that.
And I think when you have a fluffy animal being hurt as opposed to muscle, that's even more visceral to the viewer or the reader.
Yes.
But muscles, millions of muscles, that's horrific.
Mm-hmm.
Babla, what were your thoughts?
I'm just going to chime in for a second, too. As a Pacific Northwest resident here, and someone who lives close to Canada, right where this happened, the heat wave this summer was, like, record hot. And it's actually the heat that killed off all the mussels. You want to talk about visceral, dead mussels, millions of them, does not smell good.
Yeah, I bet. Far out.
No, it was not pleasant. It was just a result of just how dang hot the summer was. Like, it was just, it was blazing hot. And for way too long, too. Like, we were really warm pretty late into this year as well. For us. I really enjoyed this write. You know, it's a brevity, but I think it's very impactful. I think it, you know, refers to some things that conjure up some pretty visceral imagery to express, like, the anger and the disappointment of the narrator and probably the author. The Last Supper for man, you know, obviously kind of looking at back at, like, the Last Supper from a religious perspective. And then, again, with the First Supper for beasts, seven heads with gaping mouths, you know, again, with rather visceral biblical references. And just the idea of a wounded head licking lips, grateful for so many cooks. You know, just there's a certain kind of, like, morbid disgust kind of wrapped into that. Like, it's just kind of a twisted imagery that kind of conjures up, like, anger and just kind of a, you know, disgust, really. So I really enjoyed the write. I thought it was very visceral and well expressed. I'm angry and I'm pissed off and I'm disappointed and I'm concerned about the future without actually saying all of those things. So very, very well done on the showing and not telling aspect. I really enjoyed this piece.
Great comments, Babla. And Robbie, what were your thoughts?
As Babler had said, you know, it says it without shouting it, and it's nice to have that sort of narrative style because kind of for some people, you know, shouting it to them is what works, wakes them up. But for others, like myself, maybe it's part of being stimulated rather easily, but I just kind of shut down when everybody's yelling the same thing at me because, you know, you just get that in the back of your head, like, yes, I know. And this brevity had just caused a cascade of images for me, especially as we've all talked on about all the different disasters. And it was an odd image that was the first one that popped into my head, but I thought of the lobsters that you see. Oh, and when I see this, it just horrifies me all the time. The lobsters that you see in stores, you know, and they're in the tank, those poor things, and they've got their claws, you know, with the rubber bands on them. And you just, you think to yourself, oh, when I was younger, it didn't bother me. I didn't really perceptualize it or whatever. But now as I get older, I just shudder every time I see it. And it also made me think of there's so many practices that people don't even realize, you know, and it's just so horrifying because it's so much impact for so little. Like I have aquariums, but I'm very picky about where I get my stuff, right, where I get my critters and that. Like, I didn't know this until recently, but when you hear this, you just shake your head, like I am literally doing now. But like, I will not get saltwater fish because they use cyanide, freaking cyanide, to stun them, and it just kills all the coral around it, right? So you're killing all this coral around just so you can stun temporarily saltwater fish, and they're very hard to take care of. So a lot of the times people have them, they'll take them, and they'll last like maybe a month. So, you know, you're bleaching essentially a whole patch of coral just so that you can stun a fish for a few seconds and give it to somebody who won't know how to take care of it, and it dies in like a month, right? Like, just the waste of that is just utterly appalling to me. And I mean, he started with the, like, he's using the mussels, but it's just that I thought of all that other sea life because mussels are sea life, right? So, but it just kind of hooked me into all those other things that I've heard about.
That's horrific, Robbie. Thanks for the comment. It was very insightful. Pam, what were your thoughts?
This is definitely a powerful brevity that has bite to it. And I like how there's almost this sarcastic idea with, and now I know exactly what the Last Supper is for man. And the First Supper for the beast with seven heads with gaping mouths. You feel like this is leading into that whole idea of the end of existence. And, you know, to me, it does a very good job, as was mentioned, of showing the emotion rather than telling the emotion. So just absolutely very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Pam, I just saw you have a poem on the board, so if you would like to read that next, you're more than welcome to.
Oh, yes. This horrible thing is the reason I was late, because I wanted to write something special for you and Bobby. And so I did what I'm calling a close enough song parody. And it's a song parody, because I had to go simple, to There's a Hole in My Bucket, Dear Liza. So, which also means that you have to listen to me sing. And anyway.
<That's awesome. laughs>
Yes, I have called to torture you. All right. This is a poem in our contest. And it goes like this. There's a poem in our contest, dear Neutron, dear Neutron. There's a poem in our contest, dear Neutron, a poem. Then read it, dear Captain, then read it, dear Captain, read it. With what shall I read it, dear Neutron, with what shall I read it, dear Neutron, with what? With your eyes, dear Captain, with your eyes, dear Captain, with your eyes. My eyes can't see well, dear Neutron, my eyes can't see well, dear Neutron, at all. Then read with your spares, dear Captain, then read with your spares, dear Captain, read on. This poem is too long, dear Neutron, this poem is too long, dear Neutron, too long. Then read fast, dear Captain, then read fast, dear Captain, read fast. Now for some comments, dear Neutron, your comment, your thoughts, dear Captain, your thoughts, dear Captain, your thoughts. My thoughts are to ride, dear Neutron, my thoughts are to ride. Well, gloss them, dear Captain, gloss them. I think you should comment, dear Neutron, I think you should comment, dear Neutron. Bollocks, dear Captain. Bollocks, dear Captain. This has strong imagery, dear Neutron. This has strong imagery, dear Neutron. I agree, dear Captain, dear Captain, dear Captain. I agree with the thoughts, dear Captain, you share. The whole is a metaphor, dear Neutron, dear Neutron. Dear Neutron, the whole is a metaphor, dear Neutron. Where the hell is Pam, dear Captain, dear Captain, dear Captain? Where the hell is Pam, dear Captain? Probably drinking beer, dear Neutron, dear Neutron. Probably drinking beer, dear Neutron, dear Neutron. On to the next poem, dear Captain, dear Captain. Dear Captain, on to the next poem. Dear Captain, next poem. End song. And, yeah, I know that was slightly off. I wrote it in a hurry.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
I had to mute myself because I couldn't stop laughing. That was delightful. Thank you.
The part where I'm like, where the hell is Pam, dear Captain, dear Captain, dear Captain,
yeah.
Where the hell is Pam,
like,
dear Captain? Does that literally happen tonight?
Read faster, dear Captain, read faster. Yeah, I like that. Read faster, Captain.
Oh, man. That was awesome.
Yes, it was.
Thank you.
And I don't know if you heard Pam. I decided I was going to try the new microphone set, so there was like radio silence for about 3 minutes beforehand. So it's been shenanigans tonight.
Oh, too funny.
So I was seeing some of the sound clips you could get from tonight because a couple of minutes ago you said, "Oh, that sounds horrific, Robbie." And then Pam calls in and she says, yes, I'm here to torture you. it's just funny in my head, just what those two sound bites would sound like in isolation. It's like someone would be listening. It's like, what kind of hell show did you have last night?
It's all by fire, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I was talking about a butt hanging out.
Yeah,
I
that's
guess
right.
In my imagining of this poem, it's like a particularly not good poem that was just read that nobody really wants to comment on. So it's just like, you don't want to hear my thoughts. We'll just gloss over them. No, you go ahead and comment. Where's Pam at? Anyway, next poem.
Oh, I really enjoyed the sentiment of it. I will say the sentiment was awesome. And the fact that you managed to, that rings pretty true to form with how we operate the show as well. So
yeah, we do.
I was pretty impressed with that. The bollocks, dear Captain, dear Captain, dear Captain, bollocks, dear Captain, dear Captain. Oh, man, hilarious. All right,
Thank you.
On that note, I feel bad because I was going to move on to the next poem, and now Bab was like set it up like I don't like it. But we do have to move on to the next one.
As long as we don't go telling anyone to gloss over things.
That's it. All right.
Yep.
So I'll actually give this one a read. By T. Parry 898, and it's called Now You See Me, Now You Don't. Oh, joy of joy, I'm still alive to live another day. My arms and legs are still attached to help me on my way. Complete surprise, I have two eyes to see me through the week, and happy words for me each time I chance to speak. The engine stoked, I simply float on clouds of happiness. A bronze Adonis full of joy, I'm well and truly blessed. This handsome face is no disgrace, a body young and lean. A tiger in my tank, I'm simply bursting at the seams. So please take heed, my goodbye note is worth its weight in gold. Humility is what I see each time my story's told. Perhaps I've taken liberties a teeny weeny bit. This glowing bright appraisal may not be a perfect fit.
In truth, I'm antiquated, all these attributes I lack. My legs are both arthritic and I've got a dodgy back. I need two pairs of glasses and my hearing is suspect. My fringe is now retreating and is halfway down my neck. My jowls are deep and wrinkles creep with while laughter lines explode. My past that's making faces looks like someone that I know. And so to woo, a famous sage once said to me, just wear a crown of humor and maintain your dignity. End poem. And Sam, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I always enjoy T. Perry's writing. This has a wonderful rhyme and flow. I'm trying to figure out a favorite part here. I like, in truth, I'm antiquated, all these attributes I lack. My legs are both arthritic, and I've got a dodgy back. I need two pairs of glasses, and my hearing is suspect. My fringe is now retreating, and is halfway down my neck. I love how there's this self-deprecating humor, particularly about aging, and that idea with the my fringe is now retreating and it's halfway down my neck. It's that whole idea that the hair that disappears from the top of the head manages to show up in other parts of the body, like growing outside the ears or the back of the neck. You know, just a wonderful, clever right. But I like that in the end he reminds us, just wear a crown of humor and maintain your dignity. So really awesome write and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. And Bobby, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I also enjoyed this.
I've got a Bobby and a Bobby here.
I know who I am. Also done. I really enjoyed this. I'm with Pam. Self-deprecating humor is a rare art form. You don't see it much now. Although back in the 40s and 50s, you had humorists like Danny Kaye, Red Skelton, who would make people laugh by laughing at themselves. And I think it's a rare gift when you can take something like this and turn it in on yourself, and you're not laughing people aren't laughing at you, they're laughing with you, because you're the one leading the laugh. And I agree, and I love the way it starts, this because for those of us long in the tooth, those of us who have more road in our rear view mirror than we do in our windscreen, the beginning of this is typical the way we think of ourselves. It's like, I feel like I've got a 38-year-old woman trapped in a 68-year-old woman's body, and I look at myself in the mirror and go, how the hell did this happen? Did I miss a meeting? You know, you wonder, because you're still thinking young, but your body betrays you. And this is what the poem is talking about, with such great wisdom and humor. And I'm going to take this one. I'm going to tuck it into my favorites, because I really like this.
Excellent comment, Captain. And Robbie, what were your thoughts?
It did a good job of showing how to turn humor towards age and, you know, towards yourself. And it sparked a personal memory in me, because I'll never forget it. My dad, he had dementia towards the end, and a nurse was asking the question. I mean, he got all confused, and I mean, I inherited this very much from my dad, that kind of body sense of humor and just a sense of humor in general. But anyways, he gets confused and says, I'm sorry, your beauty confuses me. And the nurse just goes, oh, you know, she I don't think she ever forgot that. And it's just, it's such, so natural for some people. And for my dad, it was just very natural to have a certain sense of humor and a certain cheekiness. I have a little bit more of a filter than he did most of the time. But, yeah, it sparked that personal memory in me, so on a personal level, it resonated with me a bit. And like you're saying, Bobby, you know, I think it's even more common than I realized. I guess it's one of those things that everybody realizes more and more as they get older, is that there's so many people out there. I'm already starting to feel that you feel younger in your mind than you are in your body. I mean, there's not, for me, myself, there isn't as much a disparity because I'm 46, but I do feel more 35-ish. And right now, for most people, I do look around 35. I know that's not as much a disparity, but it's already, there's already a bit of a gap, right? And as you get older, you see that more and more, that people say, yeah, you know, I'm, you know, X number of years old, but I feel 30. And I'm kind of curious about that phenomenon. How it is that your mind stays at 30 and you're, you know.
Wait, you'll find out. Wait until you can say, I'm not 68. I'm 38 with 30 years experience.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm having a sense of humor does keep you, you know, youthful in the mind for sure. I've seen people, like, you know, we all seen those kind of people that I think they're the worst people to be around. Like they're older and they have like, well, I mean, even some people just start out that way. They just have absolutely no sense of humor, you know, and they just go around biting everybody's head off. It's like, oh, have a nice day. It's not a nice day, you know. Don't tell me to have a nice day. And you're like, oh, God, shoot me now. So, sorry,
I characterize those people by they suck all the oxygen out of a room.
Yeah.
And, Pablo, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I really enjoyed it. I mean, you can feel the sarcasm from the very opening. Oh, joy of joy, I'm still alive to live another day. Like, there's something very disingenuous about that. Like, it's just about impossible to read that and take it literally. You know, I'm not reading, oh, joy of joy, I'm still alive to live another day. Like, there's no way to read that that doesn't sound wry. You know, it's not... It's very tongue-in-cheek from the very opening line. So that helps, and it really helps with the humor, because as you read it, you're now in that sarcastic kind of tone. You know, my arms and legs are still attached to help me on my way. Complete surprise! I have two eyes! You know, it gives it kind of a fun a tone, and it immediately lets you know how to read it, which is excellent. Because it's not like... You get halfway through the poem and realize you were supposed to be sarcastic that whole time. It's really good at establishing the voice early on. And then of course the twist, you know, all of that is, I mean, obviously a joke. I'm actually like pretty imperfect. You know, my legs are both arthritic and I've got a dodgy back, you know, things that happen as you get older, for sure. I mean, it's and then just kind of weighing in a little bit on the idea of like how old you feel, you know. I've always kind of bounced back and forth between when I was a kid, I never wanted to be treated like a kid. I wanted to be treated like an adult because I acted like an adult. And I would make the weirdest faces at people when they'd start talking to me in a child voice and hated it. Because I was way overly mature for my age as a kid. I was like 30 in the body of a 6-year-old. And now here I am in my 30s, and I'm like, you know, I act a lot more like I'm 12 these days. I act a lot more like that 6-year-old than I did when I was 6. So my body is getting older, but my mentality is definitely getting younger. Now if someone starts talking to me in a kiddie voice, I'll probably start doing it back. But I really enjoyed the piece. It was wonderfully humorous. I liked the twist. I think it had a really strong voice and a great rhyme to it. It was an excellent piece. I tend to enjoy T. Perry's writing in general. So, excellent write.
Great comment, Babla.
Just as an aside, when I was at work, humorous aside, at work one time, like I had a former boss there, and there is a baby in a baby carriage, and they seem to happen to have the same name as my old boss. I won't say the name. I'll just make one up. Let's say Jill, you know, so they're like, oh, hey, Jill, how are you? How are you doing? Yes, you're a good Jill, aren't you? And, you know, like, this is my boss's name that they're saying to this tiny baby. I'm like, this is so weird. This is just, like, the weirdest thing ever. Just that weird age mismatch thing, you know, hearing my boss's name cooed at a baby.
Oh, man. Now, we're in the last 27 minutes, so I doubt we're going to get through all the poetry tonight. I'd say we'll be doing carryovers next week. I will get Babla to read the next one by Twinkle Star, if that's okay.
Absolutely. This is Remember Rain by Twinkle Star. Remember cold and dark November nights and lamps of burning flames of sticks that lit silent purple shadows of lost world, of steel, stone, cold granite, and bricks. When you were the starlight of my eyes, the northern stars across midnight skies, where your mirror framed in shades of gray, knew no bounds, nor reason, found an easy way, how to surround me, lift my dark veil, how to stay from cruel world of cruel fates so far, far away. Now, mirrors of first light at auburn dawn hide behind thy tired morning smile and weep, after all been written in the stars by our own hands, with letters floating like angel feathers, falling from heaven, flapping wings of silent ethereal violin notes of love, of glitter, autumn rain, and winds. Remember, November rain, washing off sins of doubt in realm of golden fields, and pain. End poem.
Excellent read, Babla. I very rarely get to say this on my show, but simply put, this was a lovely poem. Enduring love from its humble beginnings and an acceptance that love changes and grows. And I think my favorite part was that mirrors of first light at auburn dawn hide behind thy tired morning smile and weep after all been written in the stars by our own hands, with letters floating like angel feathers falling from heaven, flapping wings of silent ethereal violin notes of love, of glitter, autumn rain, and wind. It had a romanticized ethereal quality to the whole poem. I really enjoyed it. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
Pretty much the same as yours. I think they've taken a long-term relationship and they've painted such a beautifully colorful and symbolized a picture of it. Remember, when you were the starlight of my eyes, the northern stars across it, and that is so true. I mean, we start out so starstruck in our early love, and then we grow into another person, and now mirrors of the first light of dawn, autumn dawn, auburn dawn, hide behind the tired morning smile. You know, then that's true. It is so beautifully painted here with such a beautiful word picture. I really enjoyed the way the relationship, a long-term relationship, has been portrayed.
Excellent comment, Captain. And Pam, would you be able to give the last comment for this poem? I'm going to try to get through a few extra poems tonight.
Oh, sure, absolutely. I thought this had beautiful imagery. It was a wonderful emotive write. On the kind of, what I like is that it covered the struggles of a relationship as well as the good points. I really like the line, you were the starlight of my eyes, the northern star across the midnight skies. The northern star, the idea of someone who is there to help guide you. I also felt like by making the end line shorter, remember November rain washing off sins of doubt and realm of golden fields and pain, it really added to the impact of the ending, of that idea of looking back at the more difficult times of a relationship. So just an excellent write and very well done.
I'll have to be going now.
Great.
But it was enjoyable I'm glad that I happened to come back. When I happened to come back to listening to shows again, that one of them happened to be your anniversary show and that I could participate a bit. So happy anniversary.
And then we're doing it again. Everyone's gone silent.
I said my bit. I was just waiting.
Everybody talk. Everyone shut up.
I'm amazing.
Thank you so much, Lovely, for calling in.
Thank you, Ben. Have a good night.
You too.
You too.
All right. With that, we're moving on to the next poem, and I'll get the anniversary girl to read this one by Kay Crown.
It must have hard words in it. Okay.
No, surprisingly, I don't believe it.
Not bad. It's short. I'll be darned. Truth is Dead by Kay Crown. If we knew the truth, we wouldn't pretend. Instead, we tiptoe around each other in a dance of the unspoken. Blinkered reality is death. Vulnerability slinks into the darkness, the connection eroded, collecting dust. End poem. Wow.
Great read there, Captain. And Bablog, would you like to start the comments this time?
Sure. I really like this, especially for a 33-word brevity. That's, I think, pretty well done. I loved the idea of tiptoeing around each other in a dance of the unspoken, following, you know, that couplet, if we knew the truth, we wouldn't pretend. Like, it just makes me think of all the times in life where it really is about just tiptoeing around things. People really have a knack for being indirect about things. You know, it makes me think about people having crushes on each other, romantic interests. You know, are they interested? Am I not interested? Like, and so rarely is it just like, hey, are you interested? You know, that's like the end game. You know, that's the death of the dance in a way for romantic relationships, but so many other things as well, you know. So many times you're just left wondering, you know, I'm going to do this and it's going to make them happy. Did they like it? What if they don't like it? What should I buy them for their birthday? Like, there's a million things that arise in life that are just about not being direct about things. And then it does feel like when you do get direct and you get that final answer, well, then it's done. And it is almost like a little bit of a death, because when you know, then all the mystery is gone. So I really liked it. I think it had a lot to say for such a brief piece. So well done.
Excellent comment there, Babla. I agree with you. The lines that you referred to, the tiptoe around each other in a dance of the unspoken, really stuck with me. You know, the tiptoeing on eggshells of your own making, afraid of how the other person may react. And steadying yourself against vulnerability, because who likes to be hurt? And I think in some respects vulnerability is both a blessing and a curse. I thought it was an inspired write, and particularly as you mentioned, 33 words, it conveys quite a lot. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm always impressed with these brevities that have so few words and yet speak volumes as far as emotion and depth go. You know, to me, this is about how we avoid the truth about a relationship, because we know once the truth is out there, the relationship will fall apart. And I think it's got strong lines all the way through and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Captain, you read it. What did you think?
I agree completely with everything that's been said. I think this is a stunningly powerful brevity. It speaks volumes with economy, fired right to communicate so clearly. Well, very often, the truth is avoided just to forestall any kind of conflict, or just because we don't want to hear the truth because we can't deal with it.
Excellent comment, Captain. And we have a SoundCloud next by Marius Alexandru, and I'll just cue that now.
We can feel in the air the love's wind as it blows harder this season. The sunlight gently kiss our old bodies. We perceive its touches as treason. The forest trees turn red. We feel the rust under our skin. Strange silhouette, weak shadows. We fear the aging from within. The sky is crying and the moon is sad. Any leaf that's falling, leave for us a green umbrella, a safety cover. Hiding from the world, we're singing life together, a cappella. We die little by little, moving forward towards life. A romantic poet with his beautiful wife.
And Captain, do you want to comment first on this one?
Sure. Marius's poetry always has such a classic feel to it. His use of language is so elegant and all the more impressive because English is not his first language. So this makes it doubly impressive to be able to write with such grace and elegance in a second language. We can feel in the air the love's wind as it blows harder this season. Those first two lines, I think it's beautiful. It just, the sun lights gently kiss our old bodies as we perceive its touch as treason. This is a beautiful piece. I mean, it's very emotional, very graceful.
Great comment, Captain. And I agree with you. I think this part here, we die little by little, moving forward towards life, a romantic poet with his beautiful wife. It's such a sweet homage to his wife. And I would imagine it's not always easy living with a writer. And there is a simplistic message of enduring love in this piece that stood the test of time.
Yes.
Deeply moving. Yeah. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
I really like that he uses such wonderful imagery in here. And you see the way that life changes and the use of nature imagery within this was great. And I like how it's about how no matter what kind of changes are going on through life, you move forward, with joy and happiness in your heart, with your partner beside you. Just a wonderful write and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. And finally, Babla, what were your thoughts?
I really enjoyed it. It did feel very classical, and just the beautiful simplicity of just aging, with a partner and moving through the life seasons. Here it seems like summer turning to fall. It's very romantic and pastoral, and in a lot of ways really reminds me of like classic fireside poetry, just the romance of it. There's something very romantic about this piece. I think it's beautifully written, and it paints both a landscape and an image of a deep love as you move from one stage of the life to the next. I think it's just wonderfully written.
Excellent comment, Babla. Babla, would you be able to read the next poem by Stephen Hollins?
Sure. Absolutely. This is Garden Dreaming by Stephen Hollins. Mike Jagger's voice floats over the neighbor's fence, singing Brown Sugar while Neil and the girls cook fayoya, I don't know what that word is, muffins. Two male peacock feathers suspended, seesawing on the spiky leaves of the totara tree. Maisie the gray and cream cat, a silent ninja warrior in white socks, leaps from the macrocarpa tree stump up to the deck through the balustrades. The mustard and beige caravan begs for a makeover. Perhaps a wraparound deck, held in a picket fence, rainbow-colored, outdoor pizza oven and hot coffee to boot, lined in terracotta pot plants, overflowing with purple, white, and red flowers. Let's add a young Argentinian couple whose fingers play the guitar. She sings in Spanish. Her fingers peg up the all-white washing. The orphan's chicken house also calls for a makeover, new clear light plastic roof and patched up walls to welcome a chesty brood of tawny brown and rusty red hens, laying size 7 eggs on fresh hay, escaping now and again onto the soft clover lawn to strut and showcase their award-winning plumage. But it is the common minor bird who struts his horned-colored claws on the lawn as the 5 yellow and black striped wasps helicopter in and out of the tea tree blossom. Neighbors play another Rolling Stone classic. I can't get no satisfaction, but I try and I try and I try. The great totara tree scraps holes in the fluffy clouds, its roots anchored deep in the dark, blind, voiceless soil. The fragrance of hot feijoa muffins handcuff my nostrils and escort me off the garden balcony into the kitchen as I follow the pulse of now, 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 now. End poem.
Excellent read there, Babla, and that word stumped me too. I just remembered it as I gave it to you to read. I've heard of them before, but I just don't know how to pronounce it. Yeah.
I know, I'm like,
let's get some comments.
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, man. And I'll get Pam to start off with the comments this time.
Oh, I like this. I like how it captures the everydayness, but the grandness of the everydayness. The orphan chicken house also calls for a makeover, new clear light plastic roof and patched up walls to welcome a chestnut and rusty red hens. I really like those lines there. I like how he throws in the Rolling Stones classic, I can't get no... Well, he says, I can get no satisfaction, but I thought it was I can't get no. Not sure now. Anyway, I like how he interweaves the everyday with the idea of rock and roll and cutting loose and, you know, having fun. So really just an excellent write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
An astonishing word picture here. I mean, this is truly a word picture. This is the visual imagery in this just leaps off the page. It's so detailed and descriptive that it puts you right into the setting. It really does. And it's almost like a travel log, like the observer is writing writing a travel brochure and describing the setting. But it's I like the great Totara tree scrapes hold in the fluffy clouds, its roots anchored deep in the dark, blind, voiceless soil. I love that stanza.
Great comment, Captain. Yeah, look, you know, this actually reminds me of my childhood at the caravan park every year over summer. And, yeah, it may have been humble, but the memories and the friendships lasted quite a while. And I think, as you said there, Captain, Stephen really pulls you into the poem with his densely laden imagery. And it's a complete snapshot, if you will, and quite a sensory ride. And, Babla, final word on the poem.
I love all the uses of colors and animals in this to paint the picture. You know, it's really kind of beautiful, and you're just kind of transported to what I assume is South America based on just the description of animals and plants and all that. It really is transporting. Like, you can just put yourself in this backyard, that picture like this sprawling, like half farm, half overgrown, well-loved and tended, but also a bit dilapidated yard that I just really love. And you can almost hear the music and just feel a good afternoon. I really enjoyed it. I just felt like it was well done, you know, just to pull you into a place at the moment and just kind of put you into that good, the good mood of garden dreaming. I really loved it. I thought it was excellent.
Great comment, Babla. Now, rather than squeeze in one last one, I'm going to firstly ask Pam whether she's got any contests she wants to run through.
Oh, absolutely. First of all, for tonight's Art of Seduction, Fill My Eyes is running a contest with some Thanksgiving-themed prompts to have fun with. For Sunday's Rhythm and Rhyme show, Rex is running a contest with the song Alice's Restaurant from Arlo Guthrie, which is an 18-minute song, but you can choose to write to any part of it, or you can just simply write about, you know, your perhaps a good or bad Thanksgiving that you have experienced, or, you know, just make something up, whatever you feel fits with the song and theme and the lyrics. And then as far as contests that I'm running, I have for After Midnight, Tuesday is epitaphs, which is a variety of epitaphs from famous people, varying from serious to humorous, just something for everyone's taste. And then for Break On Through next week on Friday, I have up Leonard Cohen's puppets as a prompt in a contest. And that's what we have going on.
Awesome. Thank you, Pam. And Babla, I believe you have a contest potentially up at the moment for your show.
I do. So there's my contest, which is titled Beautiful Disaster. And it's just kind of based on some random quotes that have to do with the topic, but also natural disasters, as I live in an area that was recently hit by a pretty nasty flood, and a lot of my community has been displaced. I'm very fortunate in my house escaped the flooding, but that's not true for a lot of my neighbors. I mean, literally, like, a few houses down. And
And then Faziana is also hosting a contest that is actually for this Friday's show that's based on Emily Dickinson quotes. So she's pulled several quotes from Emily Dickinson and the show Dickinson that is loosely inspired by her to hopefully kick up some inspiration. So I encourage everyone to go check that out.
Excellent. Now, my turn. I just want to say a hearty thank you and congratulations to Captain B2 for being there for this year and taking the lead on the contests and being there when I can't be there. And just thank you so much. I think it's a great partnership. And final word to you, Captain. You've got 2 minutes.
As closing, I'm going to treat everyone to a recitation from my favorite author, that well-known poet Anonymous. The catfish lay, and it goes like this, as Pam says, the catfish lays 10,000 eggs. The homely hen lays one. The catfish never cackles to tell you what she's done. And so we prize the homely hen, while the catfish we despise, which only goes to show you that it pays to advertise.
That's great.
Always love that. I don't know why.
You know what? That is single-handedly your sense of humor is the reason I picked that Alice in Wonderland track at the beginning of the episode.
I love that. I know the words to that, too. You're lucky I didn't sing along with it.
I wouldn't have been able to stop you anyway.
No, I did love that. I loved your choice. Thank you. My quirky sense of humor thanks you. No, it's been a treat, and I've really appreciated you letting me take the lead on the contest because I truly love putting those things together. They're fun for me, anyway.
That's awesome.
So, it's taken a bit of the work off of your back, which I think that's what a partnership's for. So thank you for inviting me a year ago to join this merry band of loonies. I've enjoyed it, and hopefully we'll live to fight another day. So
yes.
We're at 2:20. Yes. What do you want to do? And we're going to have a couple more contests coming up. I'm going to give a teaser for Christmas. We're going to have the Santa spinoff, and we'll let you figure that one out when you see it. And then we're going to have one on coming up here in the next few days on social media, or I should say anti-social media, as I'm going to call the contest.
That's it. All right, ladies, we've reached the end of the episode. All right. Night, everyone.
Say it again.
Thank you.